The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning, and welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We're located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, but this morning we are as close to you as your home. We are a Unitarian Universalist congregation dedicated to nurturing the spirit and transforming the world. I'm Preston Lutweiler, treasurer of our board, and I want to personally welcome you this morning, wherever you are on your life journey, wherever you are on your spiritual journey. Whomever you love, whatever your gender identity or expression, we welcome you into our ever-expanding circle of compassion and caring. If you are visiting us today, you will notice in the Zoom chat a link to our virtual visitor card. This is a way for you to connect with us and us with you. Please fill it out at any time during the service. Now, I would like to give a little context to the topic of our service this morning. Our Unitarian Universalist second principle is belief in justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Our Soul Matters theme for the month of November is healing. In keeping with our second principle and with our theme for the month, Natasha Taylor Smith will speak about justice and healing. Throughout history, there have been men and women, some of them Unitarian Universalists, who have given time, treasure, and talent, risked their freedom, and even given their lives in the cause of justice. They have left us inspiring words about justice, and I'd like to begin our service today with a little quiz about quotes that I hope will demonstrate the universality of their message over time, race, gender, religion, and station in life. So, this first quote, "Law and order exists for the purpose of establishing justice, and when they fail in this purpose, they become dangerously structured dams that block the flow of social progress." Was this said by Herbert Hoover, J. Edgar Hoover, or Martin Luther King? That was Martin Luther King. Who said, "Justice will not be served until those who are unaffected are as outraged as those who are"? Was it Nelson Mandela, Maya Angelou, or Benjamin Franklin? That was Benjamin Franklin. Who said, "I do not pretend to understand the moral universe. The arc is a long one. My eye reaches but little ways. I can calculate the curve and complete the figure by experience of sight. I can divine it by conscience, but from what I see, I am sure it bends towards justice." Was that Euclid or Martin Luther King Jr. or Theodore Parker? Well, a famous version of that quote was made famous by Martin Luther King Jr., but it actually was from Theodore Parker from a sermon he wrote. He was a Unitarian, and he wrote that in a sermon in 1853. Who said, "Throughout history, it has been the inaction of those who could have acted, the indifference of those who should have known better, the silence of the voice of justice when it mattered most, that has made it possible for evil to triumph"? Was that Elie Wiesel, Haile Selassie, or Harriet Beecher Stowe? That was Haile Selassie. Who said, "I am for truth no matter who tells it, I am for justice no matter who it is for or against"? Was that Malcolm X, Thomas Paine, or Ruth Bader Ginsburg? That was Malcolm X. And finally, who said, "If you're caught with an ounce of cocaine, the chances are good you're going to jail. Evidently, if you launder nearly $1 billion for drug cartels and violate our international sanctions, your company pays a fine and you go home and sleep in your own bed at night"? Was that James Comey or Josh Shapiro or Elizabeth Warren? Elizabeth Warren. So, I hope you enjoy and are inspired by our service this morning. We'll begin with lighting our chalice by Susan Hare, followed by my lighting of the peace lamp, and then our gathering song, hymn 150, All Whose Boast It Is, sung by our own Christine Perry.
Good morning. As we light the chalice today and think about the message we are about to hear, we are reminded of our second principle, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. We'd like to share the following quote from Caroline Kennedy. The bedrock of our democracy is the rule of law, and that means we have to have an independent judiciary, judges who can make decisions independent of the political winds that are blowing. And now we'll have Preston light the peace lamp.
And now I will light the peace lamp. You will repeat after me and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us and with all the people of the world. Thank you, Christine. And it is my pleasure this morning to introduce Natasha Taylor Smith. Natasha graduated from Central High School in Philadelphia and went on to Hampton University, where she graduated summa cum laude with a BA in political science. She took a job at Prudential AARP Operations in Fort Washington, while there enrolled as a part-time evening student at Temple University Law School. After becoming a full-time student, Natasha was awarded the Barrister's Award and the Award for Outstanding Oral Advocacy and worked at the Temple Family Law Clinic and the Defender Association of Philadelphia. After graduating, Natasha worked as a staff attorney at the Defender Association of Philadelphia, representing indigent clients. Later, Natasha had a private law practice for 8 years. She has successfully litigated almost 100 jury trials. Currently, Natasha is an assistant federal defender at the Federal Community Defender Office, Eastern District of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. She's represented defendants at every level of the courts. And today, she will share with us some of her experiences and will speak about the history and future of judicial reform and how it can heal some of the wounds that remain in our society. Natasha?
All right. Thank you, everybody. I was asked to come to you today to speak on the topic of healing the world through judicial reform. Healing. The dictionary defines healing as making something healthy again. But those of us in the faith recognize that our world and its people have oftentimes struggled with its health. We've struggled to live a life free from blemish and free from the infliction of pain and hurt on the least of us. But the scriptures tell us in Isaiah 1:17, learn to do right, seek justice, defend the oppressed, take up the cause of the fatherless, and plead the case of the widow. So I come to you today, not just as a woman. I speak to you as a woman of faith, as a woman of color, and more specifically, as a woman of color in the law. I am probably the thing that was never meant to be when the first barristers started arguing cases in what was once our fledgling nation. I consider my life a testament to the women who came before me, the women who had doors closed in their faces, who watched less qualified men surpass them in pay and in status, women who only wanted to be judged by what they had to offer as opposed to just their reproductive parts. I stand before you as a woman who has dedicated her life to the principles of justice and faith in my everyday interactions. I was raised in what some might consider a drug-riddled neighborhood in North Philadelphia. My mother was a teenage mother who never finished high school, but was determined that her daughter would achieve more, even if she never made any preparations for that dream. She taught me about the principles of fairness and being even-handed. In addition to my work at the Federal Defender's Office, I also teach a class at Temple University School of Law and Trial Advocacy. And I use my first class to get to know my students and to tell them a little bit more about myself. I often tell the story about my first experience in a courtroom. It was the summer after my second year in law school, and I was working as a certified legal intern for the Temple University Family Law Clinic. I was assigned a custody case that I would try at the end of the summer, and I spent most of that summer meeting with a client and getting her ready for court. She was a woman who had not always made the best decisions in her life, but who had worked really hard for the 3 years leading up to when she came to the clinic to become a more positive influence in the life of her daughter. And I have to tell you, I kind of hyped up the court system for her. I told her that this was an opportunity for her to have her day in court. She would finally have a chance to talk about the abuse she suffered at the hands of the father of her child and talk about all the progress she had made since the father had separated them. And when her day in court came, she was more than ready. She was eloquent during her direct examination and unshaken when the attorney on the other side questioned her. But during her examination, I looked up and I noticed something. It was the judge. While this woman was discussing the most intimate and painful details of her life, the judge, the one person who was supposed to deliver justice to her, was sitting in his chair with his glasses atop of his head, asleep. Asleep. And in an instant, the ideas of fairness and even-handedness ceased to exist for this woman. The judge had determined that she was unworthy of justice, and so the pain that had been inflicted on her so many times by so many people in her life was repeated in that place, in a place that was meant to be a safe haven in our society. She would no longer find healing on that day. And I'm sure that many people here today have seen the face of discrimination. Irrespective of if the basis of that discrimination was your race, your gender, how and where you worship, who you love, or what zip code you happen to be born in, discrimination is insidious, and it pulls out the worst in humanity with the effect of suppressing the spirit and gifts of others. Oftentimes, discrimination is perpetuated in the name of protecting those groups it holds to seek down. For example, in 1873, the Illinois bar denied admission to a woman simply because she was a woman, because unseemly things happened in courtrooms and women need not be subject to such an untoward life. Or how in 1961, when the United States Supreme Court upheld the exclusion of women from jury service in a capital case in Florida, when an abused woman was accused of taking the life of her husband because women had children and families to care for at home, and that should be the main focus of their lives, not being bothered by such graphic accusations. It was a way, as Supreme Court Justice William Brennan would later write, of placing women not on a pedestal, but in a prison. And I know I don't need to remind you about the Dred Scott decision, finding that no white man was ever obliged to respect the rights of a Black man, or Plessy versus Ferguson, which found separate but unequal to be just fine for an entire segment of our society. Over the years, we have relied on our judicial system to little by little chip away at the worst of these man-made separations and bring our nation's people closer and closer to living in harmony with one another. I can tell you, I was a part of the legal team that advised the Montgomery County Register of Wills to issue the first same-sex marriage in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and who helped defend the lawsuit that ensued from the Department of Health, because who someone loves should not keep them from enjoying the same freedoms and liberties enjoyed by their neighbors, relatives, and friends. And unfortunately, the strides made by our courts over the last 5 to 6 decades are now in jeopardy. In the last 4 years, the federal judiciary has been packed with ultra-conservative judges, judges who do not reflect the diversity of this country, either in person or in thought. Judges who were rewarded for being ideological zealots or for donating to the most to a certain presidential campaign. Judges who would strip away the legality and sanctity of those families we here in Montgomery County have fought so hard to protect. And it's not just marriage equality that is in jeopardy. It's healthcare, your civil rights, the integrity of our elections, the very air we breathe and the water that we drink are all in jeopardy. And so we look to triage the damage that has been done. We look to shore up our foundation so that it might withstand the storm that rages all around us. But how do we accomplish this goal? Is it even possible? Well, I know what the believer would say about what is and what is not possible. Amos 5:24 tells us, but let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never failing stream. It is incumbent upon all of us, each and every one of us, to see this promise fulfilled. Each actor in the judicial system has a role to play. I serve as the defense attorney, and I represent indigent men and women charged with offenses in the federal system. When I explain to younger children on career days what I do for a living, I ask them to raise their hand if anyone has ever said that they did something when it wasn't really true. And then I ask them to raise their hand if they did something that they shouldn't have, but they still have to face the consequences. And I'm always really quick to be the first one to raise my hand as to not single out any particular child. And then I tell them that my job is to make sure that if they're that little boy or little girl who didn't do the thing, that everybody knows that they didn't do it. And if they did make a mistake, that the consequences are fair, not harsh. And on the other side of the aisle is the prosecutor. It is their job to seek justice. But for far too long, the mission has been skewed towards seeking convictions. Just look at how their successes have been measured. They haven't been measured by the number of cases that came through an office. No, instead, it has been measured by the number of convictions. And you only have to look at the Twitter feed for the current U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania. The Eastern District of Pennsylvania is the federal district that makes up Philadelphia and the 8 surrounding counties, including Montgomery County, Bucks County, Delaware County, Chester County, Northampton County, Lehigh County, and Lancaster County. His Twitter feed is replete with stories touting the number of arrests and celebrating the loss of liberty of members of the community that that office is tasked with serving. The dog whistle of law and order, meant to separate law enforcement from the communities they serve, is ingrained in the way many prosecutor offices around this country are run. Prosecutors have a great deal of discretion, and as many of in our community, it is our job to hold their feet to the fire. They get to decide who gets charged and what they're charged with. Their discretion even extends into the purview of sentences, because when mandatory minimums are involved, it is the prosecutor's office who decides whether it is or isn't applicable based solely on their word. That's a lot of power to shape a person's life. So what do we do as members of this community? How do we put it into the mass incarceration over criminalization of our communities? Well, we call, we write, we lobby for more progressive measures and alternatives to incarceration. We push for bigger focus on restorative justice as opposed to retribution, and we vote. I know that you have heard on more than one occasion that elections have consequences. And so every vote in every election matters. The executive branch in this nation appoints federal judges to lifetime positions, and the Senate confirms them for life. It is not enough to just come out every 4 years if you want your voice and your ideals and your goals to be heard. Here in Montgomery County, our prosecutor is an elected position. In the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, we just reelected our attorney general, my former boss, Josh Shapiro. And he is presently in a constant battle with individuals who would deprive men and women of the right to have their votes counted. And he has taken on that challenge while attorney generals in other states like Kentucky would have those ballots, ballots that were legally cast in Pennsylvania by Pennsylvania residents, cast aside. The people, you, have the power to hold those elected officials accountable for the decisions that they make that affect the lives and the freedoms of our neighbors, friends, and relatives. Next year, Montgomery County will have an opportunity to elect a new judge to its bench. The judiciary is meant to provide balance in our system of government. However, all too often, we think of the people who become our judges as somehow set apart from us, and they begin to think of themselves as the same way too. But these people who are judges, they are our neighbors. We're their fitness instructors. We teach their children. We do their taxes. They are us and we are them. We have to fight for a judiciary that represents our values and our core beliefs. We have to fight for a judiciary that is reflective of our community, one that understands the plight of the human condition. It cannot be enough that they have attended fancy schools or grew up on the right side of the track. Look how well that worked out for some of our so-called leaders. One of my heroes in life has always been Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You see, before Justice Ginsburg was appointed to sit on the Supreme Court, she dedicated her life to helping women escape the prison that Justice Brennan wrote of. As a lawyer and later as a justice, Ginsburg never used a sledgehammer to get her point across. And it wasn't because she was afraid of the repercussions or because she was weak in any way. It was because she saw the strength in persuasion versus compulsion. And her contributions were not limited to gender equality. She was a tireless advocate for voting rights, immigration law, and issues involving the LGBTQ community. She was not a woman simply satisfied with her own advancement, nor the advancement of groups with which she identified. She, like myself, was a lover of the law and a lover of the Constitution and the commitment that that document makes to the people of this country, all of the people of this country. The judicial system touches the most intimate areas of our life, how we interact with our families, how we resolve disputes with our neighbors, how government protects its citizenry, and how we safeguard our world for our children and generations to come. Prioritizing the attributes of compassion, knowledge, and commitment to our community is the only way to ensure that the bench is reflective of our community, its strengths, and the ideals that we hold dear. It's the only way to safeguard against what happened to my client all those years ago in that small courtroom when that man had so little regard for the authority he held that he would be so callous as to fall asleep literally on the job. In the scheme of human history, the 244 years that this nation has been in existence is but a blip. And although we were founded on the principles of equality and justice, on the very principle of freedom itself, we have in so many ways missed the mark, but we are not done. We must fight on to protect the unfortunate and weak. We must press through quandaries and darkness. We must continue to evolve and grow and learn together as a community. We cannot give up on what is good or other things that might handicap us. We must rethink how we can no longer allow the old guard who might not have graduated from the middle school bully mentality to shape and reform, to shape the reform that we seek. If we truly want to make this nation whole, we must recognize that there is justice in not just equality, but also in equity. We must rethink how we treat returning citizens who have paid their debt to society, because all too often they are treated like pariahs. And we must promote projects like the Relapse Prevention Court that I work in federal court, that focuses on helping individuals acquire and maintain their sobriety as opposed to punishing them for their addictions. We must ensure that people we imbue with power over our judicial system are cognizant of the implicit biases inherent in the system and take an active role to remedy the disparities that find 80% of the children in this county, in Montgomery County, who are incarcerated to be Black and Brown, although they only make up 17% of the population. And although studies show that those children do better when they are not taken away from their homes, when they're not led away from their communities. And while the history of our judiciary is not without blemish, it remains full of promise. It is still a place that we go to resolve our disputes peacefully, sensibly, and fairly. And while we have yet to achieve true equality, and while there seems to be endless attacks on the strides that we have made, what the life and the words of someone like Justice Ginsburg reminds us is to respect the views of our opponents, but to never give up. Never give up in the face of slammed doors. Never give up in the face of laws or even legal decisions that go against your rights or the rights of others, but to find a way to take each of those losses to change an establishment that might not be all we want it to be or might not have lived up to its potential. Do this so that you may have some small or giant role in helping in the healing process and changing our judiciary in a way where everyone's rights and liberties and lives are respected, irrespective of their gender, of their race, of who they love, or where they grew up. The time has come for real reform in our judiciary. And it is the people who will make that happen. I want to thank you all for allowing me to address you here today. And I want to give a special thank you to your pastor for opening it up his pulpit to me, and to Preston Lutwaller and Linda Weaver for inviting me to speak with you today. May God continue to bless you, to bless this congregation, and to bless our country. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Natasha. Now we will have a brief period of matters of the heart where you are invited to say something about the sermon. You may have been moved by Natasha's talk, or something that has moved you or affected you negatively or given you hope and joy over the past week. So we will have a brief period of musical meditation, and then Mike will give you instructions on how you can be unmuted if you would like to share with us. Thank you.
Spirit of life, come unto me, sing in my heart all the stirrings of compassion, blow in the wind, rise in the sea.
And now Larry Hare will extinguish our chalice.
I extinguish this chalice flame, yet may whatever light has accompanied us through this service carry us through the days ahead. Our closing words are from the author C.A.A. Savastano. Some say the universe arcs toward justice. I think more often it requires the occasional push. Our closing song is hymn 121, We'll Build a Land.
Justice shall rule. peace, let